Noni Sethi, your job, like part of what you do is actually you help me find the right words. You help executives find the right words to describe the transformations they're going through. What would you very succinctly in three words describe transformation as?
Purpose-driven change.
Thank you for that one, Noni. All that and more on Transformers. What is transformation and who are the people leading it today? My name is Anne Fanai. I'm CIO and Vice President of Business Platform Transformation at IBM. Join me as I talk to my fellow nerds and we learn from each other about transformation, what it takes, tactics, strategies, methods, and even a little bit more about our humanity. This is Transformers, a Think podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Noni Sethi. She is a partner at Boston Consulting Group. And, you know, I've gotten to know her as part of the transformation practice, you know, financial transformation, cost transformation, business platform and process transformation. She's had a phenomenal career at BCG, starting even before that with, obviously, she got her MBA. It's, you know, one of the ways you get into the fun places like BCG. And before that, she was a financial analyst at Microsoft. So thank you so much, Noni, for joining.
Very excited to be here, Anne. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to poke since I mentioned you went back for your MBA and ended up at BCG. But you have this rich financial background. Can you like take me through, I think there'd be two really interesting things here, is like how you went from being kind of a financial operator to a consultant. But also, like, you know, you're one of the big consulting firms that is very sought after by many, many MBAs, you know, career professionals. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, what that experience has been in that type of environment, too?
Yeah. So, actually, I loved my time at Microsoft because I was at Microsoft back in, I think, 2013 through 2016, when Azure was not nearly as big as it is today. And so, being a financial operator in that environment was a ton of fun and super challenging because I was getting to actually see the product scale. And actually, I was part of the team that helped set the targets for our first shift to consumption. That's actually when I realized, you know what, I want to have a variety of these kinds of problems in my career. And one of the reasons I sought out consulting at BCG was just the fact that we get a chance to see so many of these, you know, issues across multiple different organizations. And one of the biggest changes for me was I always used to be someone who was super, super deep in the data and then let the data teach me on what my hypothesis should be. I think BCG, I'm still very much focused on bringing the data to light, but it's a lot more hypothesis driven instead. So it feels a little bit more like I get to be a scientist in my day-to-day life on, hey, this is the hypothesis that I think is happening. Let me prove or disprove it. And then what does that actually imply for actions? Now, what does that actually mean in terms of what I get to do on a day-to-day, you know, experience? I think at Microsoft, my work was a lot more on operations. At BCG, it's a lot more on transformation. But the one thing that has actually stayed consistent is the fact that in both environments, I actually need to think about how to embed the change in an organization.
Yeah, and that's, again, I think, you know, projects we've worked on problems, is it like, it's not just embedding, it's like, it's beyond transformation. Is there an operating model? Is there a way your greater business operates? That's so interesting. And so do you have a definition of, like, how do you think of value creation now? If you're really trying to do true transformation and not just the cost-cutting component. How do you view value transformation coming out of value creation at the other side of a transformation?
So I think typically when we think about a transformation, it's almost these three steps. There's the prepare, the build, and the embed. And there's actually value creation in all three of them. The preparation phase is where you're thinking about really what is the reason for being for this transformation? What is the case for change that we're trying to drive? Is it the fact that we need to actually make sure that we are getting, you know, we're making it easier for clients to actually do business with the organization? Is it that we want to make sure that our sellers have a better experience, for example? The build aspect is, well, all right, now that we have a case for change, what precisely do we want to go do about it? I think value creation there is actually saying, now that I've got this meta case for change, how does that actually translate across each one of the functions? And then in embed, the embed portion is, how do I actually get every layer of the organization to fit in with that case for change and what we've defined and prepare and build? And I think value creation there is, how do we actually ensure that the employees want to go along with that change to ultimately deliver on the overall case for change? So I think the definition of value creation kind of changes along where you are in that journey. But I would say you can't get to the ultimate value from transformation without having the definition of value creation for each one of the prepare, build, and embed stages.
Yeah. And do you have a sense of, again, I think this is the part of the journey where I'm with you right now. I think obviously you and some of the other partners have been working with my boss, Joanne Wright, who's basically IBM COO, and really kind of saying like the large scale IBM transformation, how does it translate? And it's our, free cash flow, billions of cost takeout. But, at a level in my seat, in a CIO seat, we've talked about some of the things I'm doing to measure what is going right, like, faster time to closure, the right priorities lined up from the top. Are there kind of some more broad reaching or generic ways that you look to capture, did that value creation happen as a measurable thing? Like what types of maybe benchmarks or other insights do you bring?
Yep. So I think a couple of things from there. There's obviously the financial metrics, right? In terms of what does your revenue growth look like? What does your free cash flow look like? Has your E to R gone down to the extent that you believe in E to R as a metric? I think the other piece is, what is your ROI on any one given initiative? So there's the financial aspect of that. But I think in addition, and this is one piece that I think you in particular have done really well, and there's the, what are the big business metrics that I'm also delivering? So when I think about, for example, your speed to delivery of your S/4HANA platform, for example, what you're doing with CPQ, it's how fast am I really delivering new features and functionality that support the business process that in turn supports things like, faster cycle times for a client from pipeline through invoice.
Well, and I love that you said that because I believe the episode airing right before us is I'm talking to the CIO of SAP, Benny Blau. So I think we talked about this. So thank you for validating, our work with SAP. That was fantastic. So you're sitting in a seat where you're really being looked to even within BCG, your own firm. I know, when we work with you, you're leading teams, you're bringing teams into IBM. What kind of trends are you starting to see? Like, obviously, IBM is a major client for you right now, but you've worked with other customers and you talk to all the other practitioners. Like, what sorts of trends are you seeing that may not be obvious sitting inside a company that you get to step back and see from a macro position?
I think a couple. One is, just across the board, transformation being used to invest for growth. And what I mean by that is, I think even if you look at the headlines across tech, even a few months ago, you hear a lot about cost, 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 cost. But in reality, I think a lot of individuals are thinking about, well, where can we actually reinvest those savings for the next chapter of that company's growth? I think the other piece on here is we are seeing major trends around future of work across the organizations. So as more people are looking to actually get value from AI, agentic AI, Gen AI, they're starting to realize that they're not going to be able to unlock that value without fundamentally reskilling many of their teams. And so actually thinking about what that looks like. And then I think the last piece is a lot of organizations are starting to think about, well, are we actually focused on are we focusing the right amount of our time on our technology platforms versus fundamental process transformation? So one of the things that we say at BCG is, in any transformation, it's the 10, 20, 70, where 70% of your time is actually spent on process. We're seeing a lot of interest in actually making sure that people are spending that 70% of time reinventing new processes, especially as they think about where they want to invest for growth and where Gen AI can have disruptive impact on their organization.
Yeah, and it's actually, I feel like it's just weird tie a conversation I was having with some of our teams in finance and folks building out our S4 platform further more globally, was the concept of, I think an interesting piece of transformation, would love to see how you potentially overcome this, is you might have some leaders who maybe come from the outside, have worked at a lot of different companies, and they're like, hey, look, I can see in what I'm doing, IBM is doing something that's taking too much time, it's very onerous, and I can show you what better looks like. Or I can bring in a big partner, like we were talking about SAP, or I can bring a Salesforce, say, can you show a demo of what the best could look like? But sometimes, like, I don't think this is an IBM phenomenon. You could see this at pretty much any company. You become a little too embedded, and you've even if you're looking at what else is out there, you kind of start to say, well, but this is the way that's doing. This is the way that's working. So that 70% of process becomes a great thing. And I think I've mentioned this a few times before, and I know you've heard me say this. It's like, I assume positive intent always. Like, you can't do transformation if you don't assume everyone around you is working positively towards the same goal. But, you know, there is that, like, we all have our blind spots. We all have places where, like, you know, I don't think best of breed is right, or I'm kind of a blind spot to best of breed. How do you kind of overcome those folks where there's like a little bit of inertia towards the process transformation?
So I think a couple of things. I think that's fundamentally my job as a consultant, is to hold the mirror up to where we might be navel gazing a bit too much. But fundamentally for me, I think the best way to do that is actually with the data. Because the thing is, with any process change, there's going to be a very clear set of financial trade-offs or metric-driven trade-offs. And typically what I've found is, if you can make a business case for a change and that business case matches your fundamental metrics for transformation, like your cycle times, like your revenue, like your cost, then that should be enough to justify the change. And if you can't have a data-driven conversation about that, that likely means, one, you either haven't set the objectives for the transformation the right way, or two, probably means that you are so embedded in a particular way of thinking that it is the job of your management consulting partner to continue forcing that data to light until a decision can be made.
Yeah. And like you said, navel gazing, I think I stole from one of our other leaders at IBM. She would say, oh, look, we've got a room of people admiring the problem. So it's, you know, but it's a hard thing. Again, it's sometimes you just have to admit you don't know what you don't know, those sorts of things. And could I pull the thread a little bit? And in your experience, is this, rather than ask you, why do you see transformations fail? Like, is that the main reason you see people attempting transformations fail? Or is there another insight there?
I think there are probably around three reasons. So the first one is not starting the transformation with a real case for change, just in the first place. Like, what is it that we're trying to achieve? And I think this is where we see organizations continuously going through transformation, because they can never close the chapter on a single one by saying, yes, we've achieved this metric, this outcome. I think the other piece is actually not bringing along the people who are supposed to be driving that process change on a day-to-day basis. So it's one thing, and Anne, you and I have experienced this, it's one thing to actually go in and change the function that you're trying to transform. It's a completely different one, actually, trying to do the system re-engineering of every process that system needs to engage with. And I think the third piece is eventually just lack of management bandwidth. Do we actually have someone with a centralized transformation mandate who is living and breathing the fact that the organization has to move towards these outcomes? Luckily at IBM, I think the reason the transformation is succeeding is because many of these things are in place across the organization, but that's not necessarily true for many others.
Yeah, no. And I think, certainly something their chairman has infused, but I feel really lucky that, I mean, this is what my boss is, you know, besides the operations side, transformation is her mandate. She is the, you know, accountable, responsible party for driving this throughout the company. So it's, I feel like I have great air cover in that regard as we try to make some pretty, radical thinking changes and process changes, right?
Exactly.
I'm gonna say here, one of my favorite things that you've ever said to me is, like, you said, the best feedback you ever got is how to make, you were in a session where management consultants, someone asked, like, what's the best thing you do? And it's like, I put together the words. I feel like I'm going to ask you to say this because I'm ready. Honest to God, I didn't mean to set you up for it this way, but it's like, you say the words in a succinct way, in a clean way, that when you're living in the problem so much every moment, it's hard for me in my seat to come up with the right 10 words. I'd like your feedback on that, because you'll probably tell me what the right words were, which is why I adore you. But then secondarily is this one of the things, like that communication, is this the stronger communication, could that help also to avoid some of the failures and stumbles? Would love kind of the both sides of that.
So I think a couple of things. I do pride myself on being able to find the right words to express what it is that we're trying to do. I think that communication when coupled with data is crucial to the success of a transformation. And what I mean by that is, I think if you are sort of sitting in an ivory tower developing a case for change, but you haven't thought about, well, what does that mean for the senior leadership team? What does that actually mean for teams that are executing this on the ground? How do I get the message to people who are going to be very reticent to go make that change? It almost doesn't matter how much data and analytics, et cetera, you bring to light, because without the right words to motivate the team and without the right, more than just words, without the right communication plan to deeply help everyone understand their place in that strategy, it becomes very hard to actually ensure that you're executing the change. And that's one of the places where, when I think about what consulting organizations do to further differentiate themselves, and I think this is feedback you've given, Anne, is actually think about not just that case for change and how do you communicate it, but how do I go down to someone who might be sitting in an offshore center, let's say in a completely different location, and make it really visceral for them on how their job is going to change as a result and how they contribute to that picture of success.
Yeah, it's. I think it was, we're working through a more complete set of OKRs, for example. It's like, we're building it. How can you ladder up and just say, it's my manager, my manager's manager, my executive, my VP, my SVP, Arvind, and really like saying, I know what I am coming in to do matters. And I think to me, times of transformation, there's of course this human piece of like, well, my job and my value is this mission. And you know, there's hard decisions that have to be made. And someone might be valued for what they're doing in that moment, but it might not be something that needs to be done going forward. But it's so important. The HR data I've seen repeated is people leave jobs for three reasons. Compensation, which we have limited ability to impact. Career, I don't see a career path. Or third, I don't see how my work has any value. And it's like those last two are really the ones leaders in a transformation I view as being able to impact. So
exactly. And actually, Anne, I think in addition to this piece, there's maybe one other that I would mention, which I've seen you do particularly well, which is there's the communication across the layers of organization, but then there's the communication with your business partners as well within the organization. And I think that's the other piece that often goes missing, especially as we think about CIO organizations. CIOs are so critical to actually go enable the business process, but very rarely do you actually see individuals having the conversation on, here are the process metrics I'm trying to support, here are the platform metrics I need to deliver as a result, and then here's the engineering excellence I'm driving within my organization. And when I look at what you and Joanne have set up across a number of different initiatives, it always starts with, what is that process metric? Then what does that mean for my strategic platforms? Then what does that mean for my CIO delivery organization? And having that clarity while coupling it with, how do I make this meaningful for everyone up and down the organization? I think it's just very powerful.
I appreciate that compliment, but I actually, thank you for that. But I feel like that's one thing I'm constantly trying to improve. Like, I either wish I did not require 7 to 9 hours of sleep to function, or there were another 10 hours in the day that I could balance this out. Because like, you're right. I think that is, I find the most value in my role, having that heart to heart with head of operations of infrastructure, head of our technology lifecycle services, head of our technical sales, right? Like there where I get the insights on like, oh crap, here's where we're doing well, where we could improve. Like there's a glitch. I saw this from an architectural cleanliness standpoint. And, I had that moment where I forgot what the experience was of the person in the field trying to make a sale. And it's like, I don't think you can be an effective CIO unless you have that empathy, which is weird because I'm not a particularly emotional person, but like to have that empathy, like you got to understand, like I've said before, like it's my job to create a beautiful experience so we can do all the things faster and create beautiful experiences for our clients. And I really truly mean that, but getting there is it's hard and it's fraught with a lot of bumps in the road. So I'm going to flip a little bit. Since we're talking about really what consulting does well, what do you wish in your seat? What do you, and I won't, you can genericize this, please, because I do want this episode to air. what do you think management consulting firms could do like a little bit better? Like what are some skills they could ramp up and be even more powerful and beneficial?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. If I take it back to that three stages of sort of prepare, build, and embed, I think on preparing and identifying what the case for change is, I think consulting companies do a great job there. I think on building what that means for the set of initiatives, I think we're fair there as well. I think embed is probably where we could be even better and where there's an opportunity really for consulting companies to differentiate themselves, because there are a few different components of it. You can pilot something and say that it works. Great. And that's a wonderful way of iterating. But there is a certain length of time where you need to enable a catcher on the client side to actually help further embed that change for when you're gone. And then there's the component of, while you are still there as a consulting partner, what can you do with the level threes, four, fives, and sixes to really get them bought into the vision? And I think places where I personally, I won't make a comment on BCG on this one, places where I personally have struggled at times is, you know, how do I make sure that I'm enabling the client without necessarily wanting to drive that change myself? But then the second piece is also knowing that there is a time limit to how long I can engage. What can I do to really pull in those L3, 4s, 5s, 6s to make sure that they understand the vision before I'm no longer there to help explain the vision that we co-created together and prepare and build?
Yep. No, I think that's completely fair. Completely fair. One of the other topics like we've gone down the rabbit hole on is, I think for me personally, I think there's this balance of where AI plays, making sure you play right with the AI. And to me, that actually goes back to the process transformation too, right? If you put AI, I think I've said this many times, like you put AI on top of a crappy process, it's just a faster running crappy process or faster running crappy systems that you should shut down. So you've got to really think process first. Now, I think there's a difference of approach whether you're inside a major enterprise system versus like, hey, I can, you know, this helps my help desk or minimizes my help desk, or, you know, IBM is a large entity. I can put an Ask IBM out there, which my colleague Matt Lightson has done. And that's been a huge boon, like finding things in a sprawling company with lots of tentacles everywhere. What is your take as part of transformation? Do you think of it as an order of events? Do you think it is it more tactical, more strategic? How do you think about bringing AI into transformations?
I really like the framework, and I think we've built this in conjunction with IBM, of this eliminate, simplify, outsource, offshore, and then automate. And so for me, it feels a little bit more like a linear set of events that need to happen before you can bring in AI and Gen AI to really maximize the value of it. Because as you said, if I am going through the process of automating processes that don't need to exist in the first place, it doesn't matter how effective I get at automating them, I'm not actually going to deliver the value. Instead, what I may end up doing is I may end up actually creating a number of integrations and dependencies and data silos that someone now is going to end up inheriting as future technical debt, which is very painful for the CIO organization. And so when I think about transformations, it's truly first, do your eliminate, do the simplify, do the offshore and outsourcing, eat your veggies, and then you get to go to the dessert that is Gen AI, for lack of a better analogy.
No, and that's fantastic. And it's funny, you brought off the, you know, the offshore. I actually like to think of it as globalization a little bit. To be clear, I'm not trying to like polish a difficult topic, but it's like, I believe as a global company, you have to live and operate in the places you exist around the globe. And we cannot be a US-centric company if, you know, we have presence around the globe at banks around the globe, large entities around the globe. It's like you have to have the right global presence in support of the company you have in those geographies as well. And I think, again, hard topic, but I do think there's a reality we miss when it gets simplified, like oversimplified to as like, you know, outsourcing.
I think you're exactly right. And because I think one of the other issues we run into is when we're in that initial design phase of a transformation, so many times we try and look for, here's the global solution template that serves as a baseline. But in reality, there are so many real market-driven variations. For example, a sales deal in APAC is not necessarily going to have the same dimensions and size, value delivery, et cetera, than one that we're going to face in North America. And so I think that the change that you've made to globalization is probably actually one that we should adopt as part of how we're thinking about the framework overall, because there is no such thing very often as a true global standard template that applies in every single environment. And globalization is a much better word than offshoring and outsourcing.
Yeah, no, and like I said, to be clear, I'm not trying to like, again, polish the turd as they speak, but it's like, you know, I truly believe that, you know, you've got to harvest really great talent from all around the world to be a successful global company, like full stop. So, you know, you've been through a lot of these. I'm curious, as we kind of go into maybe, we've given a few human vignettes about Noni as we've gone through here, but like, do you feel like at some point in your career, you've either felt like a failure, felt you had a failure, either whether with BCG, Microsoft, maybe even in your MBA or your undergrad, is like, do you feel like there's a moment like that was a really pivotal learning moment for you in your journey?
Yes, actually. I think, interestingly, I can probably point to failure in every single one of my roles, because I think in general, that's then what has contributed to the long-term success. Well, the success I've had so far, at least. I think one of the pieces that I would call out probably at BCG as a failure, a more recent failure, would probably be the fact that, you know, just as even we've been engaging in the CIO organization together, I really deeply wish that I had been able to be around for more of that sort of embed. And when I look back on the value delivery that we've done together, I think now, as the rubber is meeting the road with the design in practice, I think it's been a really crucial learning for me on there are individuals at the L6, L7, L8 levels who are now having to work in a very different way, form, fashion. And when I look back at that experience, I think, what more could I have done to make their experiences easier? And I wish I had put in, me personally, not the BCG team, but I wish I personally had put in a little bit more effort in terms of making that transition much easier for those individuals and potentially being a better partner for you on that one as well.
I appreciate you saying that. And I mean, for what it's worth, with the big changes we went through transformationally, that's actually one of the things I kick myself about a little is like, you know, I feel like we spent many, many months, hours, weeks, weekends building up organizational change management materials, training, you know, doing all hands, doing AMAs on Slack, you know, creating Slack channels where people could engage, you know, spur of the moment, trying to put a lightweight process and it's like lightweight process where none existed. So we didn't have challenge, like to take the 10 minutes now so you don't have the 3 hours of pain later. And it's like, I feel like there's always one more thing I could have done as well. So I'll share that with you. It's something I'm, again, places I'm constantly looking to get better at.
And that's actually where, maybe this is a really cliche statement, but I typically don't think of the word failure as the right word, in the sense that, okay, sometimes it's very binary. You've either delivered, you know, a cost or a revenue measure, or you haven't. But when you're going through a large scale change and a large scale transformation, I think about what, you know, this example as a learning experience for what we need to do better next time. And yeah. So one of the things that I would say some of my failures have taught me is it's good to design slow, it's good to iterate fast, and then it's good to fail faster so that you know what you need to go fix and sort of pull forward into the change for next time.
Okay, I might steal those words. So let me wrap with one kind of, it's a comment, but a question is like, so one of the things I've observed, I think it's been, almost 2 years we've been working together on projects. I met you pretty much the day I rejoined IBM in April of 23. And one thing I've seen is like, you have a work ethic almost unlike, like you are superhuman. Like I do not know, like I made the joke about requiring 7 to 9 hours of sleep. If I get like six, it's the amount of caffeine it takes. And like, you'll be like so jazzed. You'll be like, I'm on this project and I didn't have to, but I'm working on 2 hours of sleep because this is, I love this data and I'm digging in, and you'll send me a spreadsheet with like 300 tabs, but like wonderful analysis out the other side of it. And you just, I have this observation of your work ethic, but it really feels, it's so rooted in your pursuit for knowledge and like your hunger to learn more. And it's like, is there like, where do you get this from? Where does this drive come from in you?
Well, I can point to two individuals, my parents, for sure. I would say, you know, as I was growing up, they really modeled that behavior. But I think the other piece also is, maybe this is part of the reason I went into consulting. I just fundamentally love solving problems. And so for me, if a problem is interesting, it doesn't really matter how much time it requires to go solve it. It's like, I don't know if when you were growing up, you did a lot of puzzles, but I used to be that kid who would like sit in the living room with a 10,000 piece puzzle and just like try and put it together until I was done.
I was more the kid that ripped apart my like Nintendo and Atari video game system to figure out how it worked and try to put it back all together. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's why you're a CIO and I'm a consultant.
There you go.
I think that's actually what it is. When my brain finds a puzzle that's interesting, it's an experience like no other, and I just want to go solve the darn thing.
Yeah, no. Well, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, Noni, Sethi, again, thank you for taking the time to do this fun little podcast with me. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Anne.
And thank you, everyone, for staying and listening with us. We hope you'll come back again next time. And thank you, everyone, for staying and listening with us. We hope you'll come back again next time.